And good evening. Welcome to Northern Gardening. Your host tonight is myself, Diane Booth, and Melinda Spindler was going to be joining us and was unable to, so I shanghaied Nick Wharton to come in. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how you doing?
We are going to have a local conversation tonight about understanding your seed catalog, some tips on starting seeds, and possibly some tools that might make your gardening easier this year. We're also going to be answering questions from last month's program. I understand the Fedco program was pretty fabulous, and people really enjoyed it, so they never got to the questions.
Yeah, it was really good to listen to. I listened to it, so it was
good.
Yeah, a lot of questions I think people probably had from that one.
Yeah, I had a few in the office as well, and it was Fedco with an F, not Petco, as some people thought. F-E-D-C-O out of Maine. They are a fabulous seed company, and a lot of us in Cook County, I know, do order from them. They have some fabulous varieties.
Yeah, I use them pretty extensively. They have a nice catalog. They don't put in pretty pictures, but I think that lets them keep their prices lower as well because they don't put a lot into the production. But a lot of interesting tidbits of information in their stories and things too. So
yes, and for those of us who are growing in Cook County, it's kind of nice to have seeds from another northern state. And so that works out pretty well. So we hope that you're going to call in tonight. We air on the second Thursday of every month from 7 to 8 p.m. The program is hosted by Northwoods Food Project in Cook County Extension. It's also rebroadcast at 6 a.m. on the second Saturday morning of the month. So call in, share with us your stories, your gardening questions. The number is 387-1070 or 1-800-473-9847. You can also email questions and comments to Jana, who's manning the phone tonight at WTIP@boreal.org. So, Nick, we were tasked with answering the questions from January's program. So, one of the questions that came in was, what are good carrots and what's a good way to plant them? What do you think?
Well, there's a huge variety out there, as there are with most of the vegetables. But I try to grow an early and a mid and a storage season carrot. So I've been doing, a mixture of things. But we have a hoop house that I grow some early ones in. And that is the Mokum carrot, which it's a skinnier carrot, but it's really sweet. It's had some of the highest sugar content readings of any of the carrots.
Right.
And it's a good early one. Gets going great in the hoop house. And I guess that one is my early one. And then we've grow Yaya, which is
Yaya?
Your list here. Yeah, I do like that one. It's you don't want to let it get too big.
Uh-huh.
It'll crack. It seems to crack pretty easily.
But it has a good strong tops.
It does have good tops, and it's a hybrid, so it's pretty uniform and sweet, and I guess it's a Nantes type.
Yeah, and that's also the same type that Mokum is, really. I also grow Mokum. That's my number one, too, for fresh eating.
Okay.
I've had kids who don't like carrots, but they like that one.
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of cool.
Huh. Kids that don't like carrots, that's unusual.
Well, you have three kids, and I bet yours all like Mokum.
They do, yeah. Yeah, they're big carrot fans.
And so. I hadn't tried Yaya until last year when I have really wet, heavy clay soils.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't actually start those until like mid-July.
Mm-hmm.
And they were perfect.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, that sounds like about right for the length of time for those. And yeah, I also have clay soil, and it's, you know, it can be wet or hard as a rock depending on the weather, I guess. But so the Yaya is a good one, and I guess that it translates from some Eastern European language to grandma, I think, is what it is.
Yeah, I think I've read the same thing. I actually canned those this year, and I've been enjoying those in soup.
Oh.
And so that's kind of a fun one. I've never canned that particular variety before, so.
Yeah, I haven't either.
That's worked.
So
what's your storage one?
The storage one, well, I've tried Bolero, which is a popular one.
Yeah.
It's a hybrid also. And I found that for my soil, they got really fat at the top.
Yeah, they
but
do.
They were really short. So I found an heirloom one, and I don't know exactly how to say it. It's Rodelica or Rodelica, and that I got from the Turtle Tree Seed Company.
Oh, yeah.
It's a German variety, and it specifically said it was good for clay soil, and it was great. And we still are eating those now, you know, from storage, so... I've been really happy with that one. I'm going to do that one again.
Oh, good. And so now tell people how you're storing it, because that's kind of interesting.
Well, I'm storing them in a cooler on my unheated porch. So.
See? People don't have to have a root cellar. You can do it lots of different ways.
Yeah, that's how we do it. I guess I have to bring them into the house on really cold nights. But other than that, they're just in the cooler and... You know, you go through and pull out the ones that are starting to grow or sprout.
And how far back do you cut the tops when you go to store them for people?
I cut them right back to the top. Well, I don't even cut them. Usually I just twist
pull
off.
Them.
Yeah,
yep.
Twist off the leaves.
Because you don't want to leave that top on or it's going to start to grow.
Right, or great. Get mushy and black.
Yeah, because you'll end up with carrot root rot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, those are the three varieties that I'm doing mostly, but there's different types of carrots, I guess, too. The Chantenay and the Imperator.
And yeah, the Imperator doesn't work very well here because they're so long and skinny.
That's your California bunny carrot, right?
That's when you can put your arm down into the soil and it goes all the way down. That does not work here.
No, it doesn't.
You either hit rocks or clay. So.
Yeah.
So the shorter varieties actually work better.
Are those the Chantenay varieties?
The Chantenay are actually pretty good. I like Nantes, even though they say, you know, that they actually do better in sandy soil. I have found in my clay soils they do quite well as well because they're short. Shorter and blunter.
Right.
Whoever asked this question last month, I hope you're listening because these are really good varieties. And it's kind of interesting when two of us garden. I've been gardening for 30 years. And how long have you been?
Well, I've been gardening, I guess, about 10 years. But we have a small CSA, which stands for Community Supported Agriculture Farm, where We deliver vegetables to our members once a week throughout the growing season, and it's a different way of marketing your produce. It's more of a direct marketing to people who buy into the farm, and we deliver once a week for 14 weeks, and it gives us a good outlet. It's a good way to get people involved in the farm. And we've been doing that for, I guess this will be our sixth season coming up. So,
which is fabulous.
Yeah.
I mean, and what's interesting is we don't usually talk gardening too often, but a lot of times when we do talk, we find out we're growing the same varieties.
Yeah.
So if they're working for both of us, they're probably working for a lot of other people.
It's a good bet, yeah.
Yeah. So how do you plant carrots? Now, some people have a hard time getting them going.
Yeah, and it can be challenging. You definitely have to get the soil moisture and the temperature make a huge difference for carrots. And I guess I've used pelleted seed and the raw seed, and the pelleted is where they put a coating of clay around the seed. It makes it easier to handle for small seeds like carrots or lettuce. And those you can place more precisely.
Right, so you can kind of even.
Yeah.
You don't have to do as much trimming and weeding later on.
Thinning later on. Yep. But really the main thing is don't put them in too deep, from what I've found. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe a quarter to a half inch, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But keeping them moist but not saturated until they germinate is really key.
So they really like perfect conditions, right?
Right,
we
right.
have that every spring around here.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's never too dry or too wet here. So.
One of the things that I have found if you have heavy clay soils, and you know how sometimes, like we're saying in the spring, those clay soils are tough?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes what I've done is I've taken a little bit of soilless mixture
Okay.
And I've put that out over the top of my heavy clay soils.
Mm-hmm.
I made sure it's really moist, and I planted my seeds in those.
Okay.
And you, as long as you keep it moist, it won't crust over, because
mm-hmm.
that can be an issue too. And that can be a really bad issue if you're planting in heavy clay soils and you don't have the right temperature or the right moisture.
Yes. I've used sand, I guess, in the same way.
I
put the seed down and then covered it with sand. Or worm castings.
Yeah.
That's something. It's an amendment. But that gets harder when you've got, multiple 100-foot rows to cover things.
But for the home gardener who can kind of baby it and do it the way they want, that something like that will work pretty well for them.
That does. I've even used for parsnips, which are another hard-to-germinate plant. Mm-hmm. I've put boards down over the seeds after I planted them, and that keeps them moist and, protects them from heavy rain if you get a heavy rain. The trick there is, though, you got to check it regularly, because if they germinate and you don't get the boards off, then you get some really long, spindly things that
I would bet
are not happy. So
yeah. Sometimes straw will work too. If mm-hmm. you if you take straw and you just kind of run it through your lawnmower, or cut it up real fine,
grind it up a little.
Yeah, well, it works for grass seed. Why wouldn't it work for carrots? I've used it for carrots or fine seeds like that too.
Okay.
And sometimes it's easier to kind of control what you're putting over. You can see where you've covered your seed a little. Mm-hmm. That's the other issue that gets tough with those fine seeds.
Yeah, you start to wonder if you even put them in.
Yeah, or where did I put those though?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, hopefully we've answered the question last week on carrots, and we have another question from last week, last month, sorry, on how to start onions. So let's have a little bit longer discussion about onions, because that's kind of a big topic. Do you start them yourself?
I do some of them, and I haven't had the best of luck starting my own mm-hmm. onions. I do purchase a larger amount of onion plants that we get from a place down south that come in the mail.
Like Dixondale?
Dixondale, yeah.
I think everybody in Cookie County uses them.
Yeah, and those do great, but if I find a variety that I want to try that they don't have, then I'll start them myself.
Right.
And I guess...
And when do you start them?
Well, if you really want to do it right, I suppose January is about...
February.
February.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
February is probably more realistic. But you got to start them early. And then when I've done it, I start them in flats, just sort of broadcast the seed and work it in the top of the soil a little bit. And once they come up, I guess you got to give them a haircut every once in a while.
Oh, yes. So. But you know what? Those thinnings work beautifully in salads.
Oh, yeah.
I always, I had my grandson who's, 6 last year, I think. Yeah, he was 5, and he was at our house. And for him, it was really a fun thing. So if you have a kid or a grandchild and you tell them, okay, we're going to go give the onions a haircut, it's just a fabulous fun thing to do. So you want to cut them and kind of keep them between 2 to 4 inches. They say 2, but I let them go to 4 sometimes.
Yeah, it seems a little longer. I suppose you could use those just like green onions.
Oh, right? Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so don't waste them if you do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just as a quickie here, I pulled up Dixondale on the web. They have a nice website, and it's Dixondale, Dixondale.
Yes, and actually, that's a really good segue, because every year, Northwoods Food Project, in conjunction with the Extension Office, which is me, we do a community group onion order, and I've had 3 people this week call me, are you going to do the community group onion order? Because I want 100 plants of copra onions. So I've started the list, and I will put something out on Boreal maybe tomorrow. But usually we do a group plant list together so that we get a better shipping rate. And I'm trying to think, 2 years ago, I think we ordered over 3,000 onions for this small community. So, it's kind of fun. We usually order copra, which is, have you grown that variety?
That's the storage variety that
Love
I grow
that variety.
Mostly. Yeah, it's a good yellow storage onion.
Red Zeppelin.
What else? I grow the yellow Spanish. It's bigger, a little bit sweeter.
Okay.
Doesn't store quite as long, but mm-hmm. I usually get those out before the copra.
Okay.
And then I like this red tropia. It's kind of a football shape onion.
Oh, I've seen those. I've never tried them.
Yeah, it's, I guess, an Italian variety. Yeah. And they mature sort of all different at different times. So,
oh, that's kind of nice.
It is. You can pick them throughout the summer.
Yeah.
And get fresh onions. They don't store good, but they are really nice fresh onions.
So they're a red.
They're sort of a red, reddish. But reddish, pinkish. They're not like a real deep red, but they're good like a salad onion.
But your CSA members like them.
They do.
Well, yeah. That's a good thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. One variety I tried last year is the Borbolita cipollini.
Is that the little flat one?
Well, actually, there's a bunch of little flat ones, but this is a bigger one. It's like 4 inches in diameter, and it's about 1.5 inches high. Hmm. It's a beautiful onion. And look, last year was a good year for onions with all of the rain. As long as onions like to be fed a lot, so between the rain and feeding, you know, you're keeping pretty busy with those onions out there. Mm-hmm. But they were absolutely gorgeous. I've got them hanging in my root cellar. In fact, if anybody needs onions, let me know. I have more than I've got a Barb wants them. Okay. But they've done really well. They're a good storage onion. They're open pollinated.
Okay.
Which is hard to find sometimes, a really, really good open pollinated one.
Yeah.
So I've been pleased with those.
Hmm. All right.
So, well, we talked about you can start them from seed. You can purchase plants. Do you buy the little ones in the store?
I do, actually. Okay. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. The sets, the little round ones. Yeah, actually, I put those in my hoop house because they will form a bulb a lot earlier, it seems like, than the plants or the seeds. And I do those, I guess people would call them like spring onions. Mm-hmm. I wait till they start to bulb up and then pull them, and you can use the tops and the bulb, and they're just really quick.
Right.
So I don't know how they would do as a storage onion.
I used to grow them years ago, and they would actually store fairly well, like the Stuttgarter.
Yeah.
That was the variety that I occasionally grew, and they kept pretty well. They didn't keep as well as copra, or even candy, which is kind of an intermediate, not a long day onion, but an intermediate that actually keeps fairly well as well. So there's a lot of variety out there for folks who want to start onions.
I suppose we should talk about that, the long day intermediate and short day ones.
That's a little confusing for people.
It is, and we're definitely in the long day zone up here, but candy, you said, will work up
candy,
here.
Candy, we can do some intermediate day. The long day means that like at about 13 or 14 hours of daylight, what that actually means is then they start to bulb.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
And so intermediate day is like at 10 to 12 hours. And then short day is like 8 to 9 hours.
So that would be if you're down south and you're growing in the winter, basically.
Exactly.
So
you would want the short day onions because you don't want to grow them in the heat down there.
No.
So
not that we have that problem in the winter. So
well, I don't know. Not according to what Barb is telling us. It's going to be awfully cold, so don't start your tomatoes yet. So that's kind of confusing. If you read about long day, intermediate day or short day onions, you really, for up here, the long day onions are going to be better. And I think they store better, too.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. So we talked about them being heavy feeders. They like a lot of water. How close do you plant yours?
Well, I usually put them about 3 inches apart, and then I go through throughout the season, and I thin them out as they develop. So, I mean, I'm using onions in all phases of their growth, basically. So, but the 4 to 6 inches for the mature bulbs, you got to give them some space in order to give them room to expand and get big enough to make the bulb. So you want to go for that, I guess, 6 inches ideally. Is that about what you do? Or?
Yeah, pretty much. I like 6 inches by the end of the season. It's kind of nice to have.
Yeah,
because you want to give them, they are heavy feeders, so you want to have lots of room for the roots, and they'll do better. So if you're just joining us on Northern Gardening, Nick and I are discussing growing vegetables, and we're going to get to starting seeds because we just had a question about that. So please call us at 387-1070 or 1-800-473-9847. Share your experiences, or you can also email questions and comments to Jana at WTIP@boreal.org. So before we jump to our question, let's finish up with onions. How do you store onions? That was another question people had.
Well, I think the key is to get them good and dry before you put them away.
Yeah.
I usually wait till the tops are, you know, at least half gone, half dead.
Right.
And, you know, usually about half the plants are falling over or a little more. And then, you know, I like to try to wait for dry weather and just let everything set up real good. And then pull them and either hang them up or put them on wire racks somewhere dry. And I have heard mixed things about putting them in the sun or keeping them out of the sun. I don't know which.
I think they do better out of the sun, to be honest.
Okay.
I think if it's I go according to temperature. Here,
okay.
Here's what I, because a lot of times when I'm pulling onions, it's like 45 degrees.
Yeah, late
so
in the season.
If it's 45 degrees and I'm pulling them out and they're full of heavy red clay, then I do lay them out where they will get morning sun.
Okay.
And that seems to work pretty well. Ideally, if you have a place where it's about 65 degrees or 70 degrees even, that works better. And I don't know how many people have that. I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you've got 200 onions that you're drying
and
laying out.
Yeah.
So you do the best you can to keep them as dry as possible. And then they, like some of the varieties we've been talking about, especially copra, will last. I mean, till I've still got them very good ones down in the root cellar.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and you usually trim the tops off of yours?
I braid mine.
You braid them, okay.
I just braid them and hang them.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I wait till those tops are really, really dry and braid them. And plus, I think they're pretty.
Yes, yes.
I mean,
are.
I kind of like things that
are
pretty, too.
Yeah. And I found a good sign that they're ready to store is when the roots are totally dry.
Yep.
Because if you see a juicy root on there, you know that the inside of the bulb is not quite done curing. So.
Well, and the other thing is, especially last year was a bad season where we would have the flower stalks were initiated because of the cool temperatures. Temperatures were below 50 degrees for a number of nights. And what that does is, that, of course, onions are biennials, so that tells them, oh, I'm going into my second year and I have to stick my flower stalk up.
Hmm.
And once they do that, you really can't keep them.
Yeah, those don't store. No.
No, and so you either have to put them in the freezer or do something else with them. So hopefully we answered the question about the onions. And we had a question just come in. And the question is, I plan to plant flower seeds indoors for table decorations at my daughter's wedding in June. Any recommendations on how to keep the plants from getting spindly? I'm laughing because I remember when my daughter got married, I thought, oh, I'm going to grow all her flowers, right? I can do this. I ended up buying most of them. The reason, this is a great, great question. You can grow flower seeds indoors, but for a June wedding, it's going to be pretty tough to have really good flowers unless you're going to do something like impatiens or something that's short, like, you know, 8 to 10 weeks. And we can talk, let's segue right into how do we start plants and use indoor light. You're going to have to use indoor lights.
Especially if you're starting this early and
exactly
hoping for June.
Yeah, so. June is pretty tough. Phlox, annual phlox would work. And I don't know, you're not going to get any flowers for cutting.
Yeah, I guess I'm not that good with the flowers. I leave that to my wife. She's the flower expert in our house. So,
yeah. Now you could do some bulbs, but again, you'd have to be prepared for those. If you wanted to do daffodils or you wanted to do a late, you know, like an early tulip or something, but those actually have to be you have to put them in the refrigerator ahead of time. There are certain forcing bulbs. I would suggest you give me a call at the office tomorrow at 387-318-387-3015, because this is a really long topic. We are going to talk about starting seeds, though, and you can listen to that piece, but this is a big topic. And we have a comment about the onions. Our caller said for onions, we start seeds in soil blocks, plant 4 seeds per soil block, let them grow in clumps, and then thin the clumps. It's faster way to grow, and you end up with appropriate spacing. So if you're growing, you know, 400 or 1,000 onions, that's a great way to go. If you're a homeowner, you may not want to go that way.
I've heard with the soil blocks, too, if you start the clump in the block and then keep the blocks spaced further apart when you plant them in the ground, you can just leave 3 or 4 onions together and they'll size up. But you have to have the same spacing you would have if you had individual plants overall, if that makes sense. The average spacing has to be the same, so your clumps are going to be further apart.
Right. So you have, because you still need those roots to get out there and be able to pick up those nutrients.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess if people don't know what a soil block is.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Well, it's one way of starting seeds, and it's without a pot, actually. You have to mix your soil mixture, and there's recipes you can find in different books or online probably, where you can use the little form and squish it together into a cube that has a little hole in the top of it, and you actually plant your seed right into that cube, and it's theoretically supposed to hold together, and it's varying sizes. I don't know, probably
2.5 by 2.5.
Yeah, that would be an average size. And
they come in different sizes.
Yeah, you can get different forms, and the advantage is that the roots don't grow out of the block. So you never get a root-bound plant where it's trying to, the roots circle around inside the pot. And
you also always have, you're also able to see those roots. So that's kind of nice in order to kind of know what's happening with that root, how healthy it is,
yep.
Which is kind of nice.
And then you know when you start to see them, it's
time to transplant.
Yeah, ready to move on to something bigger or into the ground.
So. Now, the bad thing about soil blocks is they're quite expensive, the forms.
Yes.
Unless you want to use Dixie cups and make forms with them that way.
Yeah.
And you have to have the right soil mix, too. It's pretty critical.
It is. I've experimented with it and never quite gotten the mix just right. But it makes transplanting a whole lot easier because you're not trying to fight it out of the pot to get it into the ground or the...
And I've had the exact opposite experience.
Oh, really?
I've tried them a couple of times, and I've never had, I mean, they just kind of seem to crumble at some point.
Okay.
And so then I end up with a mess. So I don't go that direction. I think if you are really good at it and you've done it for a number, I know Melinda Spindler swears by them and she doesn't, but she must have the exact right mixture.
I
tried it together the first time and did not work. So she's perfected her technique over now.
Well,
so
Melinda's got the recipe.
I think she has the recipe. Yep, absolutely. So let's talk lighting real quick, because we want people, this gal who wants to do flowers or people who are starting seeds where they're going to use soil blocks or they're going to use regular little pots. What kind of lights do you use?
I've just used the standard fluorescent tubes.
Which are
T12s, which are the bigger, fatter ones, I guess.
Well, it's 1/8 of an inch. So 12 times 1/8 of an inch is how wide they are.
Okay. All right.
Well, inch and a half.
So that's that.
Inch and a half in diameter.
And just, it's just a shop light fixture, I guess. And I use those as little as possible because I live in an off-grid house, so we have limited electricity. But it is really critical, especially for things that you're going to start earlier in the spring, like tomatoes or peppers. And I put the lights up over the plants. You need them basically as soon as the seed comes out of the ground. You want to have some kind of light on it to get it to start.
And how close do you put yours?
When the seeds just emerge, probably I would keep them about a couple inches up from the...
And I'm even closer than that with mine, yeah.
Okay, all right.
I am.
And then you obviously move it up as the plant grows progressively higher and higher.
So, yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask what the lights are that you use.
Well, and we actually had this conversation, this has been an interesting conversation because there's about four gardeners that are talking about pros and cons of different lighting. And we all have different ideas, and they all work, but they all work differently for us. Melinda Spindler's not here tonight, but she uses T5s, and T5s are the newer, they're about 5/8, well, they're 5/8 of an inch in diameter. They're little tiny little lights, but they do put out, they have different wattages, and they are actually the best as far as cost of running. So if you are in like Nick's situation, we were just talking about that, where he is on limited electricity because he's off the grid, and he's using the T12s, which actually take a lot more energy than the T5s, it might be worth the investment of buying the T5s, even though they're much more expensive.
The bulb itself is more expensive.
But you can't put those old bulbs into your old fixture. Okay. So that gets to be a little more expensive.
You need a new fixture for
that. Yes. And the T5s, what's interesting about those is you have to be kind of careful, too, because they have kind of a limited spectrum.
Okay.
And so what they're coming out now, they're coming out with some T5s that are better for growing where they have the full spectrum, but it's, you have to be careful about that.
Yeah, with the T12s that I use, I try to get a warm and a cool, mm-hmm. which I guess translates to a red and a blue spectrum
right.
light, at one of each, and that somewhat simulates the natural spectrum.
And T5s are similar. I mean, you can get those two spectrums as well. You can get both the blue and the red. We'll call them that because that's easier for people to understand.
Yeah.
But that does help. The thing I don't like quite as well about the T5s is they can get, if they have what's called high output, they can get a little bit hot. And Melinda has said she has had an issue once in a while with them getting too close, and they can burn them, your little plants.
Yeah.
So whatever you use, you have to be aware of the heat that comes off of these things. And it's a little bit more heat with more wattage.
Yes, and sometimes those plants will just jump right up there, so you got to
in a day
pay attention to that.
I like using, I switched to T8s probably, and I haven't gone to T5s because they're newer. So I'm still sitting with my T8s, and that would be an inch bulb. And what I like about those guys is they're the most like 100% effective right at 77 degrees. And they seem to stay pretty regular, all, you know, even if the temperature increases or decreases. Whereas with the T5s, they're at optimum amount of getting their light out there at about 95 degrees.
Hmm.
So, again, depending upon your situation, you may want that or not. But if cost is the issue, you may want to go with the T5s. And a lot of people really like them.
Hmm.
So whatever works.
Right, right.
And if someone gives you free fluorescent lights, they will work.
That's how you end up with them.
Okay, so what haven't we talked about? We talked about different types of seed terminology. That was one of the questions I get once in a while. You grow mainly open pollinated or heirlooms.
Well, I do favor those because I also like to save seeds, and you need an open pollinated or an heirloom seed in order to be able to save the seed for getting the same true variety back out of it. But I guess I have started to do more hybrids as I've gotten more into needing a higher production and a more stable or reliable production. There's certain crops that I've definitely found the hybrids will perform better.
Such as
broccoli, cauliflower. I've taken to some hybrid tomatoes. I really like the heirloom tomatoes as far as eating goes, but if you want to just get a huge basket of red tomatoes, you might need a hybrid tomato to do that.
Well, and you're also growing in a high tunnel.
I'm growing in a high tunnel, and I'm growing outside as well. So I do some of both, and I've definitely experimented.
So do your heirlooms do better in the high tunnel?
They they do better in the high tunnel as far as they look better.
Mm-hmm.
They're more regular. It's just the controlled environment.
Yeah.
It allows them to, you know, do better that way. But there's a few that I found really do good outside as well.
And so which ones would you recommend to
people? I guess the new one that I found, it's called Black Prince.
Oh, yeah, I grew that one last year.
I thought you did. Yeah, that one, I just tried it last year, and for the horrible cold, wet year, it actually produced quite a few tomatoes outside that ripened. So mm-hmm. That was one.
I'm going to ask you a question about that, because I love the looks of that tomato.
Mm-hmm.
It's that beautiful, beautiful bright green with kind of the darker shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked a lot of them green and set them like I do all of my other tomatoes to ripen inside.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them ended up with like blossom end rot or had fungal issues.
Okay.
Now, I did not wipe them down with a bleach solution or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never had to.
Yeah.
So did you have?
I didn't try that,
okay.
Really. I guess I got rid of most of mine before
okay.
I tried to keep them. So.
Okay. That was the only thing. I mean, I love that tomato, and I like the taste of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But that didn't ripen after the fact is good.
That's
the
other ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So... Yeah. You have another one?
Well, that one for outside, and then another one that I tried, which is not an heirloom, but it's a newer open-pollinated variety. I got it from Baker Creek Seeds,
mm-hmm.
which I think that fellow was on the show, I don't know, maybe last year.
Jerry. Well, I think it's been about 3 years. Jerry.
Okay.
Yeah
Jerry. And they're in Missouri, and it's called Large Barred Boar. There's a fellow out in California. Yeah, it's a strange name.
I love that.
But he's been breeding open pollinated tomatoes that have that heirloom flavor and look mm-hmm. to them. And uh-huh. it's a striped tomato, but he's breeding for regularity and hardiness.
So is it a red striped? Is it a green striped?
If you could imagine a Cherokee purple with green stripes on it.
Yeah,
that's
so it's kind of a purpley background with stripes.
Yes, yeah.
Huh. So. And how many days is that one?
I think they said 70 or 75.
It's pretty good.
It has that good heirloom flavor. They weren't huge, but they ripened. And if it ripened last year, then
that's pretty good. Yeah. So. Well, and flavor is the other thing. When you have such a cold, wet season like that, when you don't get a lot of heat,
mm-hmm.
and you still get flavor,
mm-hmm.
like the Sun Golds,
right?
The little cherry tomatoes, I mean, they still had good flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was good then.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So those are my outside ones that I like. I mean, I'm always trying new things as well, but
mm-hmm.
Those two just stand out in my memory from last year. So.
Do we have a question?
We have a caller.
Oh, we have a caller online. Okay, great. And is our caller there?
Is our caller there?
Welcome, caller.
I'm kind of out of sequence because you guys are talking about tomatoes.
I know, sorry. Go ahead. We're kind of jumping all over the board tonight.
Okay, well, it was about starting seeds.
Yeah.
In the location we're in now, we've had our gardens for 22 years, and we've never used lights.
Okay, tell us how you're doing it.
Well, when we built the house, we made the windowsills large enough so we could put seed trays on the south windows, and we just wait for that natural light. And then as soon as the outside air temperature is enough, we have a bathhouse, which also we considered a little bit, which is, you know, glazed roof as well as the south side, and so it does heat up very nicely, but we have to wait
mm-hmm.
for the air temperatures to be above freezing.
Well, yeah.
And this is for home gardeners now. This is not for commercial production, because we have to raise these little trays out there and get them in so they have sun during the day.
Sure.
And make sure we get them in before it drops again at night. And actually, that's what we've done. We've never had lights. We've never had lights.
Which is fabulous. If you're planning your house and you're a gardener, you need to be listening to Molly here, because this is the way to plan your house so that you can start your seeds inside in a windowsill. But do you leave them in the windowsill at night, Molly?
Yes, actually we do.
Okay, so that helps with hardening them off a little bit, actually.
We've got really good windows.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they don't get freezing there. Okay. So anyway, yeah.
But I would think the temperature difference would also actually be good, because it would help harden them off.
Well, and then they go into that bathhouse, and it's often not real warm in the morning.
Yeah.
So they're hardened off. We don't have to harden our plants off.
That's fabulous.
Just the bathhouse exposure, you know, getting them in there when it's pretty cool and allowing it to heat up in the day and then cool down in the afternoon. So we don't ever have to harden off plants. They are hardened off.
Well, except for the wind. The wind would be an issue.
Wind is
for you.
An issue.
Yeah. Because usually it's temperature first. You want to expose it. And we're talking about seedlings, if you're growing them inside or where they're protected, whether you're putting them in the windowsill like Molly or you're doing them under lights, especially under lights.
Yeah.
The hardening off is really important. And so you want to make sure that they get exposed first to temperature differences, usually secondly to the light difference, and third to wind. That's usually how I do. And I don't know, Molly, you have any other comments on that?
No.
We're
kind of comical to watch. It would be a very interesting video.
I was going to say, that would be really fun.
If it's a windy day and you've got these little trays, you're kind of hovering over it and racing out.
It sounds like a Chinese fire drill.
Yeah, right. Anyway, but I just, there, you know, if people think about it, there are ways they could do it. They don't have to have a bathhouse like that. They have some kind of a tunnel, or some other structure out there which can keep it warm enough, at least during the day.
Yeah, light is the biggest issue, and that's why usually if people say they're just putting them in a windowsill, I say they're going to end up being spindly.
Yeah.
Because they don't get enough natural light. But yours works, so fabulous. Thanks for sharing with us.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Hardening off, do you have issues with that?
Well, I'm running in and out with my trays.
Yeah, just everything. Like everybody else. Yeah.
It helps to have the hoop house. We have a hoop house. It's just a single layer plastic, unheated.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get stuff out there for the light, like you were saying.
Right.
That helps transition from the windowsill or the
under the lights,
fluorescent lights.
Correct.
Out
yeah.
into the hoop house. But even without that, you just got to pick a calm day. And I put them out in the morning, and then I'll bring them in or cover them in the afternoon so they don't get the intense afternoon sun.
Mm-hmm.
And windy days, you might have to bring them in or cover them. I do use that Agribon row cover fabric material.
Which is like a lightweight remail, if you are familiar with sewing material interfacing.
Yeah, and that lets some light through, but it also protects from the wind a little bit.
Yeah.
And frost a little bit, too. So it's management. You just got to pay attention.
Yeah. And a couple other quick questions that we've had. One is about hybrid seeds and saving seed and F1 hybrids. And we were talking a little bit about hybrids and open pollinated. We didn't really explain what hybrid seeds are. And usually it's when you just take two open pollinated seeds that are pretty stable and you cross them. And when you cross them, you'll get a hybrid. And an F1 hybrid is usually, when you do that, and you're looking at very specific characteristics, you're breeding them specifically for cold hardiness or for color of flower or whatever. And F1 hybrids are not stable. In other words, you can't turn around and plant those seeds and then expect to get the same type of plant back again.
Right, which that's the opposite of the heirloom or open pollinated,
right.
where you can save the seed and replant it.
So a lot of times gardeners will grow F1 hybrids, and you heard Nick talk about he has found a couple that he really likes because they have the same characteristics. They all come in usually at the same time. There's all those things that make them work really, really well under the same conditions. But the problem is you have to buy that seed every time. And oftentimes, seed companies, you get so that you like an F1 hybrid, and all of a sudden you're going, okay, it's not in the seed catalog this year.
Yes. Yeah. And some of them, like the cucumbers, they've got some really great greenhouse hybrid cucumbers, except mm-hmm. they're extremely expensive, sometimes up to $1 per seed. So, you know, that's getting into the realm of you need to get production out of that to pay for it in itself.
And, right.
You know, not necessarily a home gardener is going to be looking for that sort of thing either.
Right. So, a couple other things that do come up. People have asked me, and you grow corn, right?
I do grow corn.
And a lot of people will say to me, you know, how do I know what kind of corn to pick? And do I have to isolate it? I mean, will it cross or, you know?
Yes.
So we should talk a little bit about that.
Okay.
Some of the varieties, we'll talk about the standard. What makes sweet corn versus field corn?
It's a particular gene that's in the corn. And it's a gene that allows the corn to produce a higher sugar content in the kernel. So
right.
That's what I know about.
So that's
that.
The old standard that pretty much people have grown for a long time. And then they've come out with a sugar enhanced, which is an SE gene that increases the sugar and makes it more tender. And so the corn will remain sweeter over a longer period of time, which is great for us homeowners. If you're out there picking your corn and you want to keep it a little bit longer, it's kind of nice. So that works pretty well.
And then the SH2,
mm-hmm.
It's a
shrunken
gene. It's that the really shriveled up kernels.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's got a higher sugar content. It keeps even longer, but they require isolation from the SU or SE varieties.
Right. So unless you're really growing a big area, it's pretty hard to do that. Or if you're only growing one variety.
Right.
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 So, and the reason they do that, of course, is because of the keeps a lot longer and is even more sweet. And so a lot of people really like that.
Yeah. And I'm one that prefers maybe a slightly less sweet corn with more of a traditional corn flavor to it. So some of those things taste like candy to me. So
if you have kids, they might really, really like
it. They might really like it.
If you want to get them to eat their vegetables, you might try some of those.
Well, a lot of people don't even seem to be able to get corn up here or be able to grow it. So are there certain kinds that you have that you...
You know, I do pretty well. And I think a lot of times people have difficulty with corn because it has to be less than 70 days if you're growing it out in the field.
Yeah.
and that pretty much precludes open pollinated. I will get some open pollinated, but it's usually a 72, 75, 80. You know, once in a while, I'll go that direction. The other problem is you want a shorter day variety because it's not going to grow very tall. It's going to put less energy into height. It'll only grow 4.5 or 5 feet mm-hmm. tall, and it may have only one ear, maybe two. It won't have more than that, and the ears are usually small. But up here, if you grow those smaller, shorter day varieties, at least you get corn.
Right.
So that's the trick.
And back to the seed aspect of it, corn is one that you want to really pay attention to the soil temperature before you put the corn into the ground. Because if you put a corn seed into cold, wet soil, you're going to end up with a little piece of mush in the ground, and you won't ever get corn out of that.
Or you have to pre-start them inside.
Right.
You germinate them inside and you take them out, which a homeowner can do.
Yeah.
But if you're growing 1,000, you know, 1,000 plants of corn, you're not going to be doing that. But it does work.
Right.
And that is one way to get a jump, because when you go to germinate seeds, and we haven't talked too much about that, but usually when the seed starts to germinate or starts to grow, it usually needs warmer temperatures to do that at. So for corn, optimum is probably about 60 to 70 to 80 degrees. I'll even say 70 degrees, really, is good. And so once it germinates, it can get put back into soils that are a little bit cooler. It may not grow as fast as with the warmer temp, but it won't. It'll do fine.
So you're actually pre-sprouting the corn.
Yeah, pre-germinating it.
Do you actually wait till you see the root coming out?
Actually wait until you see, and sometimes even if you have a little half inch sprout up on top.
Okay.
Just watch when you go to put them in, though, and you plant them, that you don't have any crows or anybody watching you, or you're not, and you either have to protect them or they watch you and they'll come back and pull them right out.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's a thing to think about. So what else do you grow that you like?
What else do I grow that I like? Oh, boy.
Are you a squash guy?
I do grow a lot of squash.
Let's talk about that, because that's a good one.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess there's four different species of squash, and I think really only three of them are possible up here to grow. There's one species, it's kind of rare, that really requires a lot more heat, but we've got the Pepo, which is a zucchini, or actually a lot of pumpkins are the same species. Maxima, which is the buttercup or the Hubbard types. And then the moschata or moscata. I don't know
moschata,
how you...
Yeah.
That's the butternut.
Oh, that's my favorite.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
And those, again, probably similar requirements to corn as far as the... the warmth of for germination.
Yeah, 85.
Yeah, right.
Which, so put them where it's warm someplace. You know, the old refrigerators used to give heat off. I used to set mine on one of those old refrigerators, and the heat would be perfect.
Okay. All right.
Wood stove.
Yeah, by the wood stove. And I have taken to starting the squash inside. It's, you have to be careful when you transplant them because their roots are... fairly sensitive.
Or grow them in peat pots. I start them in 3-inch peat pots.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Do you ever have trouble with the roots not getting out of the peat pot?
Well, there's where, you know, if you're very careful and you tear the top down and you go to the bottom and you're very carefully open up the bottom.
Okay.
So you don't disturb the roots very much, but you want them to go out.
Yeah.
And then you very gently put them in. It's like tucking in a little baby, you know. I mean, that's really what it is.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So the squash, it's worth starting them inside and babying them quite a bit.
But not too early.
Not too early. You don't want them in the pot. I mean, maybe a month.
Four weeks is pretty good, because they just always, they're the ones that shoot up into your lights if you're growing with lights.
Yes.
You can leave and come back and they've grown a half inch.
And you've got huge leaves and they're ready to go.
Yeah. So. Fabulous. So varieties you like?
Well, the butternut, I've really only done one that's worked. It's the Burpee's Butterbush.
Mm-hmm, I've grown that one.
It's more of a bush variety. It doesn't vine so much, and they're smaller squash, but really good quality. And those, you know, on a marginal short season, they're...
You do well.
They're pretty good. And then for the buttercup, we grow this Uncle David's Dakota Dessert, which I think they talked about last month from Fedco. And that's a really good one. And then zucchini, you know, that's summer squash.
We can grow any of those.
Just about any of those seem to work.
So we've got some more questions.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, this is an interesting one. Is there such a thing as companion plants? For example, basil and peppers inside a greenhouse and cukes and pole beans outside in same raised beds?
Well, I do some of that. I don't know if I'd put cucumbers and pole beans together. I think you'd end up with quite a jungle there, but I grow corn and beans together. I grow carrots underneath my tomatoes. I'll even put onions in all over the place and just let those, you know, use them as green onions or whatever as they mature. So, but there's whole books about that topic you can get.
Yep, and it depends upon who you talk to. If you're talking to strictly a scientist who is saying, well, you can grow them together, but what do you mean by companion plant? I mean, are you saying that one is giving something to the other one? Well, if you're planting clover and you're getting nitrogen and that's helping another plant, that works. But I don't know if garlic loves tomatoes.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of interesting, that's a huge topic. So I think it's in the eye of the beholder. There is some scientific evidence to support some of the relationships, but not all of them that are out there. So that's one of the
Would
questions.
That affect the spacing, though?
Yes. It could, yeah. And some of the companion aspects are getting the right shape of plants. Like the carrots are low, and they grow underneath the tomatoes, which vine up. So you don't want two plants that are going to work against each other. Or like the beans grow up the corn. The corn supports the beans. So, you know, they're working together in that aspect, but you wouldn't want two plants of a similar form or nutrient requirements that are going to compete against each other.
And one last comment. The flowers for the wedding in June. We have more comments. Somebody just called in who got married mid to late June this past year. Wedding was absolutely perfect, and here's what they did. They were able to just pick flowers that were available that were blooming at the time, like lilacs, lily of the valley. So in other words, go to all your friends and ask if you can pick their flowers. And they also said that they did try to force bulbs, kept them refrigerated, etc., but seems like because it was so late in the season, they didn't bloom, that option didn't work. And that's because this is a really difficult topic, but because all of those bulbs are very specific for time periods, so you have to know which variety to plant and when exactly it's going to bloom. So you can't just pick any old variety and assume that it's going to be X amount of time. So, and we have to go. So before we do, and I didn't get to the announcements, so thank you, Nick. You've been awesome. And we'll do a couple quick announcements. One is there's going to be an apple grafting workshop that will take place on Saturday, March 21st from 10 a.m. till noon. Call me at the Extension office, 387-3015. Northwoods Food Project is sponsoring a pie-luck on Saturday, March 14th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. This is honor of Pi Day, and we're talking about the ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter, that type of pie, P-I. This year, it's March 14, 2015, which is 3.1415. It comes once every 100 years. And so thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks, Barb. Thanks, Nick.
You're welcome.
Thank you. It was fun.
And let me just say, if you've missed a recent Northern Gardening or if there's anything you'd like to hear again, check out our archived episodes online at wtip.org. Thanks. And coming up next, Carl.